Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
Sponsored by Serta Pro Painters.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
So we're in that period of time where it's just usually just baseball out as your opportunity to watch television or listen on the radio, live sport.
Right.
But we're in the midst of the Olympics.
The Olympics.
So I find myself sitting on my couch late at night, flipping back and forth, intensely enthralled into
What are you watching on the?
Well, last night I was watching this sport called handball. Have you heard of handball?
Yeah, that's where you have a ball in a hand and you hit it off the wall. It's like racquetball without the racket.
No, they're playing. It's like they're playing soccer. Is what it looks like.
It's soccer without
But it's like basketball and soccer together. I did see something really cool at the Olympics.
All right.
It was called eventing. Have you heard of it?
Venting.
Eventing.
Eventing.
Like event, I-N-G.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Eventing.
Yeah.
And so it was these horses that would go over about a three-mile course, and they would jump, things and jump into water, and they had to do it in a certain amount of time. But it was happening at the Palace of Versailles.
Is there anybody riding the horse?
Yeah, there's a guy on it.
Okay.
But I didn't understand it. Now, that's what I was doing last week when you were hosting. Didn't you have dinner club? Do you guys watch Cardinal baseball at the dinner club, or do you watch the Olympics?
Very highbrow conversation at dinner club.
Oh, how did dinner club go?
Dinner club was amazing. So, Georgianne is, uniquely gifted in the culinary arts.
Uh-huh.
And she whipped up, it was
tenderloin.
Yes.
Yeah.
And her fettuccine.
Mm.
It was phenomenal. We had zucchini bruschetta for the vegetable.
Zucchini bruschetta?
Yes.
Meaning like zucchini that was sliced with like cheese and stuff on it?
Yeah. It had a bruschetta topping on top of the zucchini slice.
Wow, that sounds good.
It was good.
Yeah.
And, and then everything, the dessert and, it was.
Highbrow, huh?
Very highbrow. Lots to clean up, man. Saturday.
Now, how long you been doing this dinner club?
27 years.
So are these people who get there at 6 and checking out at 7:30? Or
We go pretty deep into the evening.
Really? Yes, okay. All right.
And in the trash in the so Saturday I cleaned up the kitchen. It was like a tsunami had just come and taken over my house. It was crap everywhere.
Really?
Dishes and stuff and,
things had to be cleaned up, straightened up.
Yes.
And you probably were using dishes you don't usually use.
Oh, the ones that had little flowers on them.
Yeah, that you got for your wedding.
Yes.
You pull out like
Royal,
once.
Whatever it's called.
Every time the dinner club comes over.
Yeah, all those.
And that stuff can't go in the dishwasher.
No, you got, and then the goldware, that's where the silverware is gold,
Really?
Yeah. And, it was, it's some fancy stuff.
I didn't know you had silverware that was made of gold.
It's not made of gold. At least I hope not. I guess now it doesn't matter.
Next time over at your house, I'll be like Les Miserables. I'll be stealing the candlesticks and stuff.
I'll whip it out for you when you come
the
over.
The gold stuff?
Yeah. We'll get it out.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Did she cook the tenderloin on a grill or in the oven?
In the oven.
Hmm.
And it was just... and the Bordelaise sauce, buddy.
Uh-huh. What is that? Bordelaise.
It's the sauce.
The creamy sauce you had?
Yes. And you put this sauce.
What did you contribute to this meal?
Huh?
What did you contribute?
Well, I moved the kitchen table into the dining room.
Ah, nice. Did you put the extra leaves in the table?
All the leaves. It's 12 people, so you got, it's a long table. And we like to have everybody at the same table. When there's not a table, at least in my house, it can accommodate 12 people. So we take the kitchen table, attach it to the dining room table, and then we've got one big...
Nice.
Table-esque kind of thing.
Do you sit at the head of the table and Georgianne at the other end?
I'm at the head of the table.
And is she at the other end?
Well, she is
like
on the
king
other
and queen?
End at the corner. So she likes the corner because it's got easier access to the kitchen. From And so that's how we kind of roll with
We don't do this. I have dinners at my house on Sunday nights.
Yes.
Every Sunday night we get together.
Yeah.
But I rarely do cooking. I just order in food. And then... Like, we have the rules. We just put the food out and, take care of your safe.
You just great.
Take care of yourself. I'm not waiting on you.
No.
Go to the refrigerator if you want something. Get some food if you want something. I probably wouldn't fit in with the dinner club.
We host, everybody hosts it once a year, so yeah. I'm off the hook for another 12 months. But
hey there, it's Hancock and Kelly in
here we are.
For our regular segment, political segment, John Hancock.
Yes.
And boy, there is lots happening. And last week we were talking about the fact that Kamala Harris had become the Democratic nominee. And this week we're talking about a major foreign policy move that happened yesterday, the release of a bunch of prisoners with Russia. It wound up being a huge trade, if you will, Vladimir Putin getting back some of his assassins and evildoers, and us getting back some journalists. But it wound up touching a bunch of countries and was a huge foreign policy win. Your thoughts on that yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, certainly it had been in the works for quite some time. It's interesting to learn yesterday that Alexei Navalny was in this conversation when it started for his release. He, of course, died in prison, likely murdered in prison by Putin. But Evan Gershkovich, the Washington Wall Street Journal reporter, was released, as was Paul Whelan, who had been held there for over 5 years, a U.S. military personnel, and his release, a couple of other journalists, one of them a green card holder who lives here in the U.S., another one a Russian citizen, released. And as you say, it involved multiple nations who were giving up on folks that they were imprisoning, Russians that they were imprisoning, who had done various nefarious activities in those countries. And I think Norway was one, Germany was one. And it was a very intricate you know, I mean, like in baseball,
it's like 16 trades,
three or 14 trades, you know, and it was kind of like that. And everybody, you know, there was some give and take, and diplomatically, it's definitely a win for the Biden administration. I'll tell you, though, I do have kind of mixed thoughts about this in that. There's already, I think there's still 70-some Americans being held, imprisoned in various places in the world. And every time we do one of these exchanges, like we did for Brittany Griner a couple of years ago, in exchange for the Merchant of Death or whatever, that guy that we had locked up, you're encouraging the behavior, you know. And so there's no... However, yes, you're encouraging the behavior, but there is, I think, a profound sense on the part of the American people that we want to get our people back. And getting those people back, this poor Paul Whelan guy is 5 years. I mean, he's got a wife, he's got family, you know, and the things that you miss over 5 years. Gershkovich had been there for 16 months, I think it was. So it's always gratifying to get these folks back.
Yeah, nothing escapes politics. Of course, the vice president was there yesterday, playing a prominent role, obviously helpful for her as she's making her case to be reelected president or to being elected president. The former president immediately took to Twitter and did what he does, John, which is just kind of poo-pooed the whole deal and said it would have happened. I wouldn't have traded anything more, blah, 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 blah. But to be clear, Donald Trump did trade 250 Houthi rebels for two Americans. He's had bad trades in the past, too. I mean, what is the strategy here not to acknowledge that this was a good day for America? Or is it just to constantly be throwing flames on things are going in the wrong direction, even when it's not truthful?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, Donald Trump is a known commodity, and he's going to do nothing but attack the opposition. And that's, I mean, he's not alone in that regard. But, you know, a predictable response from Donald Trump. I can't envision Donald Trump saying, you know, good job by Joe Biden here.
Yeah. Good day for America.
You could say that.
We never heard any of that. No. It would have been different if I was the president.
Right.
Well, and that couldn't have been more on display than this week, is Donald Trump had his show. He showed up at the National
Association
of Black Journalists. You've seen some of the comments that happened there. Came in with a very bitter, harsh tone. And was downright racist from many people's perspective, including questioning whether or not the vice president was even an African American. Boy, does this sound familiar. When does he, whether or not she's black, when do we start him wanting to see her birth certificate? Is this just reheated meat?
It was interesting. If so, one of two things is true. It was an intentional effort by Donald Trump to pick a fight there because of a perceived political benefit on the other side. And I talked to a lot of people that believe that what he did was intentional. The other take and possibility is that he fumbled the ball. You know, that simply. I mean, you can't say that that was a brilliant political move. You could say that it was a calculated political move for whatever reason, but it was not a good look. And here's what the puzzle for me is that if you look at the polls for the last 6 months, and granted, they were Trump v. Biden polls.
Sure.
But Donald Trump was consistently garnering a larger percentage of the black vote than any Republican, not just any Republican recently, well, any Republican since, you know, the New Deal.
Right.
And so I don't know if the campaign thinks they're not going to be able to sustain that because of the switch from Biden to Harris, maybe. But you certainly... if you're riding the crest of what could have been a historic performance with African-American voters, that's probably not the best way to reinforce it.
Yeah,
what happened this week.
And that was Donald Trump. And you could say, well, that's not necessarily the campaign strategy. That was Donald Trump. But it was being backed up and parroted by J.D. Vance. So it seems to me there's some type of strategy being executed
here.
Well,
it's clear Vance is going to do what? The same thing Mike Pence did. He's going to support everything that Donald Trump says.
Yeah.
And so that's no surprise.
Well, and here we are now, John. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Here we are now, though, with a new race.
Mm-hmm.
From all perception on my side of the aisle, there's almost this feeling, this inertia.
Giddy.
Yeah, that kind of like the Trump campaign was 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I think, people who were pro-Trump were telling me it's over, we've got this, et cetera. I'm seeing that same type of confidence on the Democratic side, and it's being somewhat reflected in polls. These battleground states have evened out, and there's no doubt about it that the weights are tipping towards the Democrats. This is leading into the convention, which mm-hmm. starts this week. At the end of the Olympics next week. Can Kamala Harris continue this momentum, or will it be just like we saw Donald Trump? Will we see a whiplash effect here, and we're back to a 50-50 race?
Well, Kamala Harris is gonna continue to enjoy this honeymoon period. She's going to announce her vice presidential pick next Tuesday. Then the following Monday is the Democratic convention. She's going to ride a nice crest there. And I think by the end of the Democratic convention, unless they screw everything up, which is possible, you're going to see her up in most, if not all, of the battleground states, and probably up 3 points in the national poll, which is kind of where a Democrat has to be in the national numbers. And then it's Labor Day, and we'll see. It's going to be a very close election. Both of these campaigns are likely to make significant missteps. Trump's made a couple recently. Harris is very likely to have a bad interview, a bad quote, something to go wrong. And it's going to be as these mistakes bounce back and forth for the last month and a half that's going to tell the tale of the tape. I continue to be concerned about the ground game that the Democrats built even while Biden was running, because the Republicans don't have an answer for that.
Yeah, and the Democrats have already opened offices. Well, not only already opened offices, they are working field programs in all the battleground states. I think the one extra positive that may have happened to the Biden-Harris campaign, now the Harris campaign, it was Joe Biden's team that was running that. And we're starting to see a little bit of injection of some of the Barack Obama's folks that are coming in to help. So you've almost got a super campaign emerging there.
Yep. Vice president announcement next week by Kamala Harris. It's going to be Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania. You can mark that down because I'm quite confident in that prediction. How about you?
I believe it would be. I actually, and we can talk about this later. We don't have enough time. I actually think Pete is probably the best to make the case. He's got such an ability to make the argument.
He doesn't bring anything to the ticket.
I get this. I understand. But yeah, I think you're right, Shapiro.
All right, we'll be back. We're going to talk about state politics after the news on KMOX.
Time for the Friday edition of Hancock and Kelly.
You two belong together.
Sponsored by CertaPro Painters.
John Hancock, Michael Kelly on News Radio 1120 KMOX.
You and I spend a lot of time talking about the importance of primary elections.
We do.
And in far too many cases now, almost 80% of the elections that take place in the country are decided in these primaries.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
It's an amazing fact of American political life today. It didn't used to ever be that way. It used to be in the good old days, we'd make our selections of office holders in November.
Mm-hmm.
But increasingly, the primary winner, whether it's a seat in Congress or even a U.S. Senate race, or certainly in many, many places in this country, gubernatorial races, they're all over with after the primary.
Yeah, and so as we get ready for Tuesday, and of course, so early voting's already started in Missouri. I have as well. It's very easy. You go there, you tell them that you want to vote. You don't have to have a reason. You don't have to tell them why you're coming early.
No line.
You can get in there. You can cast your vote and be a part of it.
Yesterday in the Daniel Boone branch of the St. Louis County Public Library, you go downstairs.
Yeah.
Walk in, very friendly people.
Is there an elevator downstairs if you couldn't walk on stairs?
Probably,
I'm sure there is.
But I hoofed it, buddy.
Yeah.
I hoofed it. And you get down there and you show them your photo ID.
Uh-huh.
Which I know you guys don't like, but
I don't care for it, but it's a law now.
The law. And they print out your little ballot there for you, and you go and you fill in the little rectangles with the black ink,
mm-hmm.
and bing, bang, boom, you stick the thing into the machine there, whoosh, 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 and then it gives you a bright American flag.
Yeah, and mine too in the city. That was the same process.
Then you're all done.
Yeah. Well, we thought we would kind of talk about what we think's happening in these primaries, because there are a couple of primaries that are going to decide some very important races here in the region state.
Yeah.
The first one being, John, let's just get into the congressional race that's taking place here inside the city of St. Louis. Of course, Cori Bush unseat Lacey Clay. You remember the Clay machine. Boy, they've been there 40 years, 50 years.
I think 50, yeah.
Yeah, after the Ferguson riot, she comes in, wins that race. The Wesley Bell gets swept in, beats Bob McCullough in the same election cycle. And now, as a result of the Israeli-Hamas conflict, we've got a primary.
What was that, 2018, right?
Yeah.
When they both got elected.
And we have a primary that's going to take place between Wesley Bell, a person who surged and made himself known as a result of Ferguson, and Cori Bush, who became known as a result of Ferguson, both of them trying to be the progressive candidate. But ultimately, the big division coming down over the Israeli-Hamas conflict that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I look at this race. I've not seen this kind of money come in since the Carnahan-Ashcroft race for the Senate almost,
quarter of a century ago.
That was the last time we saw this much money. I think Wesley Bell pulls this out, John. I wouldn't be surprised if Cori Bush doesn't wind up winning the votes in the city of St. Louis. I think Wesley will win St. Louis County.
And that's a bigger part of the district.
Right, but it also is the part of the district that may have people who may be opting into the Republican primary as well. So it comes down to shoe leather politics, but boy, it sure feels like the momentum's gone to Wesley Bell.
Yeah, and I mean, he's outspent Cori Bush. Well, he and his allies have outspent Cori Bush by a considerable amount, I think. And, you know, that's not unimportant. And, you know, you saw the same kind of thing with Jamal Bowman, the progressive member of Congress from New York, who lost his primary challenge earlier this year. And I do expect Wesley Bell's going to win this. And, you know, it's interesting because when this race first was framed, and there was a lot of talk about who was going to go up against Cori Bush. It was never a fait accompli that it was going to be Wesley Bell. There's a lot of talk about the state senator, Brian Williams, from St. Louis County, being the Democratic candidate.
Some people had rumored that Francis Slay should run.
Right.
And there's been a lot of people who've considered. And it's not only a local movement, but a national movement that really was trying to unseat Cori Bush, who's kind of become
trying to find a candidate. And Wesley Bell had gotten into the U.S. Senate race, folks may have forgotten.
Yeah.
And he was going to run in that thing against Lucas Kuntz in the Democratic primary to take on Josh Hawley. But he switched over to the congressional race, and yeah, it was interesting.
So then the other congressional race in the region, it's on the other side of the aisle where we're likely going to have the winner become the congressman. Blaine Lucdemeyer, far western St. Charles County, all the way down to, Columbia and the Lake of the Ozarks, that district, he's decided to retire. And as a result, we have a race between Kurt Schaefer, a state senator from Columbia, Missouri area, running against Bob Onder, Dr. Bob Onder, a state senator from the St. Charles area. Kurt Schaefer, kind of reflective to me, more of the traditional Republican, conservative, Christian-valued Republican, and Bob Onder, this MAGA firebroom and brimstone, whatever those words are, just stirring it up. He was a part of that Freedom Caucus that brought the legislature to a stall. These two, whoever wins, that's likely going to be the congressman, more than likely going to be the congressman. Yeah. And how do you see that one shaking out?
I think it'll be close. Onder has got a financial advantage, and it's interesting because you've got dual endorsements in this race. Donald Trump has endorsed Bob Onder. I think it may be the only Missouri race where he's actually picked a candidate. Remember, in the governor's race, he endorsed everybody.
Yes, the sister.
Endorsed both candidates in the attorney general's race, but here he endorsed Bob Onder. Schaefer is endorsed by Blaine Lucdemeyer, the former member of Congress. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out. I think if you look at the preponderance of where the money is spent and factor in the Trump endorsement and certainly the geography, Onder being from St. Charles County, which is a pretty populous region in that district, I think would tend to favor Onder to win that thing.
Well, as a person who would like to see St. Louis go back to having Congress people that aren't out there trying to make national headlines like Cori Bush, that's what I fear with Bob Onder. He's a Marjorie Taylor Greene style Republican. I don't want to see that. I hope you all figure that out. I'm sure you hope we figure it out in the city of St. Louis. And the other big race, John, that we have to talk about is the gubernatorial race. The governor's seat office up for grabs here in Missouri. There's a battle on both the Republican and Democratic side. Let's just handle the Democrats real quick. Crystal Quaid, the state senator and the Democratic, or the state representative and the Democratic leader in the House for the Democrats, running against Mr. Hamra, a businessman from Springfield, Missouri. Hamra spending close to $3 million on TV and radio right now. Quaid not doing much. Quaid resting on the name ID that she would have had as the opposition leader, which is not much.
Not much.
Against Hamra with $3 million. Boy, that race is probably how do you see it unfolding?
You would have to go with the money, I would think. Yeah. It's interesting. Quaid seems to have the institutional support, the Democratic state legislators. I think most of the members, I don't know if Cori Bush is endorsed in that race, but I would think Emanuel Cleaver probably would have endorsed Quaid. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But she's gotten a lot of the institutional Democratic endorsements, but Hamra spent $3 million.
Yeah.
So I think the $3 million is going to prevail here.
I should make it known that I am supportive and have supported a PAC that is supportive of Crystal Quaid. I've not gotten paid on it, but it's something that I've helped set up, etc. I think I like Democrats who want to fight the fight.
And Crystal Quaid has been. I have gotten paid. I am working for a PAC that supports Mike Kehoe, the Republican, one of the Republicans running for governor. So for what that's worth.
So then let's talk about that.
Yeah.
That's the Republican race where we're going to be a minute longer here, but we've got Ashcroft, Igel, and Kehoe. We all know who they are. Ashcroft, the Secretary of State, Igel, the state senator, who was also a part of the Freedom Caucus, and Lieutenant Governor Mike Kehoe. We've all seen the ads. How do you handicap this race coming down? Does early voting help one or the other? The Trump endorsement, who winds up becoming the big winner? How do you see this? Is this a close contest?
Oh, I think it's close. Donald Trump's endorsed all three of them. So that doesn't really give much benefit. Now, Mike Kehoe's got a money advantage in that race, pretty substantial one. And so he's able to perhaps spend more touting the Trump endorsement than are the other two. I think Kehoe wins the race. And I think Kehoe wins the race for a couple of reasons. One of them is I've never seen an election in Missouri where literally everybody, all of the groups out there have endorsed Kehoe. Even early on when Kehoe was down 30 points, he was getting endorsements from the Farm Bureau and the firefighters and the police officers and the business groups, the Chamber of Commerce, Great St. Louis. And, you know, that's a pretty substantial haul of endorsements. Now, it's being positioned against him that he's the insider candidate, and that's why he gets all the endorsements. Ashcroft and Igel are essentially kind of fighting over that anti-establishment vote out there. And it seems to me that Igel's done a better job of garnering support than some would have predicted early on. And it may be Igel's increase of support here in the last month or so that is going to help deliver a victory for Kehoe. But we'll find out.
Yeah, we'll see. I sure feel like you said, that all the momentum and all the star power, all of the organizations, institutional organizations, are behind Mike Kehoe, which leads me to believe that he would be a more stabilizing force. Even Governor Parson is with him. While I disagree with Governor Parson, I do believe he was a stabilizing force after Eric Greitens, and probably his endorsement will be helpful. Hey, we've got to step aside. We're going to come back. We'll talk about the Olympics right here on KMOX. So I'm into it, man. I'm into the Olympics. Last night, I'm sitting there, and I'm one of these people. I'm not looking at my phone to see what happened during the daytime.
Yeah, because all of the stuff is happening before you start watching.
Right.
So
there I am last night watching the girls' gymnastics. Did you watch any of it?
Might have seen a little bit.
They had it was the team competition last night.
Oh, the teams.
And so by the way, all the NBA players were there, all the basketball players were there, all the celebrities. I saw Bob Costas and Al Michaels were there.
At the gymnastics.
Everybody was at the gymnastics.
Wow.
But anyway, they had the, you know, where they do the pommel horse and the balance beam and the floor exercise.
What's the difference between the pommel horse and the balance
beam? Well, let's talk about this, because here's what I want to know about gymnastics.
I can help you.
Who even dreamt up the idea that what we'll do is we'll run 40 yards, we'll hit this springboard, and then this, like, table, and then spin around and do some things and land and try not to move?
That's the pommel horse.
Yes. And then
it goes back to the ancient Greeks, as much of this competition does.
Yeah,
Michael,
right.
Go back, and the Olympics started with the ancient Greeks. And they didn't have pommel horses back
then.
Well,
let me ask you then.
They used to do the, what do you call that, the Trojan horse there.
Right, the Trojan horse.
Yeah, you jump and you hit the Trojan horse made out of wood at the time, and you flip around and land on your
feet. But do you remember when Mary Lou Retton was doing this?
I do.
Okay, the pommel horse was just like a little single beam. You know what I mean? They would run up to it, and she would hit it, and it was like a Lincoln log there.
Yeah.
Well, now it's like a giant saucer, like a table that these folks hit.
Yeah, no. Technology evolves.
And then I'm watching it. Well, maybe so, right? Then I'm watching the balance beam. That's insanity, man. Like, listen, I've seen you walk. I mean, I'm just thrilled that you stay upright. But to be able to walk that single line, and then, John, what these folks do, they do, like, cartwheels, somersaults, and huge flips.
I mean, there's a bunch of
land
people,
on a balance
there's
beam.
A bunch of people right there that will never get a DWI. I mean, you can do that stuff on the balance beam like that, you know.
Yeah,
imagine the officers have to walk a straight line and you start doing cartwheels, you know.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good skill to develop.
When was the last time in your life you can remember you were able to do a cartwheel? Were you in high school?
Quite limber.
College, were you able to still do that stuff?
Well, I didn't attempt them in college. I could have probably pulled it off had I been so inclined, but it's been a minute.
Yeah.
It's been a minute.
See, because, like, now I look at things like, even like, oh, I'm going to hop up those stairs, like, ooh, I could hurt myself doing that.
You could.
When did that happen? When did you make the shift to, hey, I can do somersaults and, you know, cartwheels and jump and do crazy stuff, to now I'm worried I'm going to get hurt?
Well, it's
were you like in your 30s?
No, it's a I'm convinced I could do it right now if I wanted to.
Really?
If I wanted to put my mind to it, I could, you know, you stick me on top of a hill, I'll do a somersault for you.
I would love, in fact, I would pay to see you do a somersault.
Is that right?
Do you think you could actually
that's just
get...
That's where you roll over.
Right. Yeah, but you'd have to not fall over. You got to go and, you know...
Yeah, you put your head down and you roll over on your back and end up on your feet. Yeah, I can do that. A piece of cake.
You could?
Yes.
Really? Do you think you could...
Forward and backward,
if I put you on the balance beam tonight, not do a trick, just walk from one side of the balance beam to the other. No way.
A piece of cake?
I will bet you $1 million right now. You could not walk that balance beam.
Oh, yeah.
You could not do it.
I could do it. No. So what you got to do is you got to put your arms out, kind of like an airplane.
Right.
Because what that does, Michael, is it kind of gives you some equilibrium.
Okay.
And then it's very important that you put one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
You can't be walking, you know, sideways and stuff. I mean, that sucker is, you know, what is it, 8 inches wide, 10 inches, what is it?
I don't know. Not much bigger than their feet, John.
6 inches wide?
I'm telling
How
you.
How wide is the balance beam, Frank? We 4 inches.
Four inches.
So
think about that.
I do think about it. I could do it.
Now you know, the Olympics also has golf, which I'm watching right now. Are you watching golf?
No.
Why not?
You know, why watch golf when you got, you know, the horses jumping
badminton.
Over things and, the badminton, which is a very exciting sport to watch.
Hey, since we're not going to be Olympic athletes, we're going to have to start saving money for retirement.
We're closer to retirement than we are the Olympics. I'll tell all of you that. And a lot of you out there may be at or near retirement. And we've got a guest coming up who's just written the read on retirement. And she's going to join us right after this on The Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. And welcome back to KMOX. Michael Kelly alongside. I'm John Hancock. We are with you until 10 o'clock. Then Chris and Amy take over. We'll stick around for that 10 o'clock hour. But right now is Michael and I and many of you are nearing the age of retirement. We're all taking things into account. Folks are looking at what they've accumulated, trying to determine what is enough, when, how long will it last, and a lot of questions. And it's a source of some anxiety for a lot of people. And so we thought we'd check in with Casey Boas. She's the head of retirement thought leadership and marketing for BlackRock. They've just come out with a new report called The Read on Retirement. Casey Boas, welcome to KMOX. How are you?
Good, John, Michael, great to be here.
We are delighted to have you. A lot of concerns with people, but we're living longer now. The retirement age has risen in the past decades, and I think there's a lot of concern. Maybe the principal concern that people have is outliving their retirement savings. How big of an issue is that for Americans?
You're absolutely right. It's a huge issue and something that employers are thinking more and more about, as are everyday Americans. You know, people are living into their 80s, 90s, even hundreds isn't uncommon. And yet, as you say, the retirement age has stayed largely the same. And so the number one concern that we see in the survey, and we've been doing it for 9 years now, is that people are worried about outliving their retirement savings. Across the board, a full 60% of people cite that it's their number one financial fear.
And you see a lot of people that will continue working. They may retire from a professional occupation and then take a job maybe in the service industry and so forth. That's becoming increasingly common as well.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. You know, phased retirement, the second act, an encore career, these are all buzzwords that we're hearing more and more, not just in academic circles, but in people's real lives. And I think, you know, it makes sense if you think you're going to live to 100, and we find that in our survey that people's expectations of how long they're going to live is extending as well, then you're going to live your life differently. You know, that sort of go to school, go to work, retire, three-phase formula doesn't really hold anymore. It's not as modern.
Casey, I'm a Generation Xer, so I'm not necessarily close to retirement, but now's the time I got to be saving, etc. Are we seeing behaviors changing now and rules of saving changing as a result of us living longer? Are what we're being advised by financial analysts changing?
Absolutely. And so you're in the most pessimistic generation. I hate to tell you, John.
Michael. He is pessimistic. Trust me.
Okay. Gen X, we found, was the generation that's the least likely to feel on track for retirement. And, you know, I think some of that is not necessarily a bad thing. It's human nature. You know, when it is right around the corner, you start to take it a lot more seriously. The encouraging news, I think, is that we actually find this generation is most consistently saving for retirement. 80% say that they are consistently putting money from their paycheck away each year in retirement. Now, something that we're not seeing folks take full advantage of is something called catch-up contributions. So there are IRS limits on how much you can contribute to your 401k in any given year. But when you get to age 50 or older, they extend that. They give you a little boost. You can put even more away. You can put an extra $7,500 away in your 401k each year. We find that only a little over 30% of Gen X that's eligible is currently taking advantage of that. And it's not something that's talked about a whole heck of a lot. So that could be one thing to look at.
So the other thing is, when I think of Gen X myself, we didn't necessarily have the huge debt that a lot of these millennials and Gen Z are coming with. That has to be a bleak outlook for those folks as they start to think about retirement, because number one, you got youth. It's a long way away. And number two, you've got a house payment, most likely without a house, in your student loans.
Right. Well, one thing that we do see Gen X contending with, and they're classically called the sandwich generation for a reason, right? They may have older parents themselves that they're still taking care of at the same time that they are saving for their children's futures. So we see Gen Xers actually with a fair amount of student loan debt that might not be their own. It might be their kids. And we're now seeing millennials kind of creep into that sandwich generation. Now it's a double-decker sandwich generation, I guess. They've got student loan debt that they're contending with, as well as credit card debt. And same with Gen Z. Credit card debt really leaves no man behind, it seems.
Casey Boas is our guest. She is the head of retirement thought leadership and marketing for BlackRock. I think BlackRock, what, is the largest investment firm in the world? Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, you guys are big. You're managing a lot of money for a lot of people out there, and I'm sure you're giving a lot of advice to your clients. Somebody that's just getting started in the workforce, what's a good savings regimen for them to start doing early on to ensure that they've got enough when they retire?
Well, look, saving for retirement is such a personal thing. It's one of the reasons that we wanted to look at this year's survey data by generation and by gender. And, you know, for people just starting out, they've got a lot of ways that they're trying to make that paycheck stretch. And so I think that's the first thing to understand. And, you know, people should try to give themselves a little bit of grace because it takes time to get right. But saving as much as you can, as early as you can, it sounds like trite advice, but it pays off over time. And then I think, you know, the other thing that people should be thinking about is asking their employer about what options are available for retirement income. Because, yes, you have a long, long runway to save, and that's fantastic, but you're going to get to the point in retirement where then you have this nest egg, and the really hard question is, what are you going to do with it so that you don't outlive your savings?
Yeah, there you go. And folks that want to take a look at this read on retirement from BlackRock, how would they go about finding that?
You can find it at blackrock.readonretirement.com. It'll be right there for you.
Perfect. And that is Casey Boas of BlackRock. Thanks so much for your time. Retirement is on the mind of so many of our listeners. I'll tell you what else is on the mind of our listeners, Michael.
What's that?
Cardinal baseball at Wrigley Field in Chicago.
Now.
The second of the 4-game series is this afternoon here on KMOX. We'll check in with our man in Chicago and get his take on this series when we return on KMOX.
Hey there, welcome back to KMOX, the Hancock and Kelly Show. You can also see us Sunday morning at 8:30 on Fox 2 in St. Louis for Hancock and Kelly, the television show.
You've lost a lot of weight.
How do you know this?
Well, I can tell when you're on the television there, you look
Buddy, I've been walking. I've been walking like crazy.
Yeah,
I walk about
good.
5 months, 5 miles.
5 miles a day.
Almost 5 miles a day.
Well, you know, that's really interesting. You know, my mother started walking at age 67.
Really?
Yeah, we haven't seen her since.
I'd be walking away from you, too.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of relatives of yours, on the phone right now is our celebrity insider. What is he? What do we call him?
Well, he's our NFL insider, and but for today, he's our man in Chicago because he's been attending the festivities at Wrigley Field.
Hey, gentlemen. How's it going?
Well, buddy, were you at the game yesterday?
Unfortunately, I was.
Are you to blame?
It was a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, Helsley has had almost a really incredible season.
Near perfect.
Near perfect. Only two blown saves up until last night.
Right.
And this team, had a chance to win that game last night. And, yeah, I guess it's going to happen, right? Your superhero is going to blow it occasionally.
Yeah, definitely. And Helsley has been playing with fire quite a bit. Seems like he's always dancing in and out of danger. And the chickens finally came home to roost last night. But being in Wrigley for a game like that was just atrocious. Walk-off loss. And I have to hear that just awful, terrible Go Cubs Go song immediately playing. All those mouth breathers on the north side celebrating. It was a miserable scene. Miserable scene.
So you're there. Where were your seats last night?
I was in the bleachers. I was with the people.
Oh, wow. Any altercations out there or generally a friendly crowd?
Generally friendly, and we actually had a solid Cardinals contingent. There were a couple of gentlemen from Alton and Fenton behind me, so got to talk with them. We were celebrating before we had won it and learned the lesson that ain't over till it's over.
No. All right, let's talk about this ball club. We see the trade deadline comes and goes. You hate to see Dylan Carlson leave. Not really.
Yeah.
But we bring in the starting pitcher, Eric Fetty, who you are going to see today at the ballpark. What are you expecting to see from this right-hander?
Yeah, so I think he was a solid pickup for the Cardinals. You know, he's more of a three in the rotation, but, you know, I think he does have two upside, which is really what we need, someone to be a true number two to Sonny Gray. But I think he was a big addition, and I'm excited to see what he has. I think it can stabilize this rotation that's been kind of held together almost with duct tape, but, you know, we've gotten through. We're staying in contention with this group. And I think the most important thing is that he buys us some room if one of our guys goes down with an injury. Polante's been more than serviceable, and we can slide him back up if worse comes to worse and someone goes down.
Yeah, and of course, Lance Lynn on the IL right now, not known for how long. Didn't look like there was anything structural in that knee when they took the MRI yesterday, so that's encouraging. You're looking on the offensive side of the game. Paul Goldschmidt, three hits last night. Seems to me like he's performing better. He's starting to get around on the fastball, which had been a bugaboo for him all year. Arenado with a clutch hit last night, but still not hitting with a lot of pop. How do you read this offense now as we head into August, into the dog days, and then down the stretch in the fall?
Yeah, the offense, I mean, yesterday 12 hits, tough to only get four runs out of that. Goldie did have some life yesterday, and I think Tommy Pham, bringing him to this team, has lit a fuse. It seems like they're playing with a little bit more heart. You can feel the passion and intensity that he brings. And Michael Ciani has really improved his offensive game as of late, especially since June. I mean, he's been, it seems like almost every game he's getting a hit now. And with that speed and defense, if he can hit, I think he can be a very valuable Cardinal for a long time to come that not many people saw coming into this season.
Nobody saw it. And, you thought for, and once the injury kind of played out, everybody expected Tommy Edman was going to be the Cardinal center fielder. He certainly was last year. And he provided fine defense in center field. But Ciani is special out there on the defensive side of the ball. And as you say, he's starting to hit now. So that's good. Who are the Cubs sending to the hill today?
That's a good question. That's a good question. I know we have our aces lined up for the series, or our four best guys. I'm not sure who they've got on the bump today.
All right. And then you are usually, back in the day when we had Hancock and Kelly late night, you were our official NFL insider. We're talking to John Hancock, our man in Chicago. The NFL season kicked off last night. The Hall of Fame game. It got rained out in the third quarter. But this is going to be a pretty interesting year of NFL football. How do you break it down? Can the Chiefs three-peat? And if not, who's going to rise to the top?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously I have made some pretty strong predictions in the past about the Chiefs and have not been right too often on those takes.
Runs in the family.
I think they're going to be have to be the favorite at this point to get the three-peat. It's incredibly rare, but they have a lot of people coming back. And as long as Patrick Mahomes is your quarterback, Andy Reid's calling the plays, they're going to be a formidable force. I think my Chicago Bears may actually be able to make some noise this year. They have a lot of hype. Caleb Williams is looking good in training camp, and they have a very strong receiving core. But the NFC North is going to be a tough division. Lions obviously made the NFC Championship game last year. The Packers knocked off the Cowboys. They're both looking to be tough again this year. And then Joe Burrow is going to be hopefully healthy this year for the Bengals. And we know that they're the only team that's beaten the Chiefs in the playoffs outside of Tom Brady. So a healthy Joe Burrow could make things more interesting in that AFC race.
Yeah, AFC is going to be interesting. Back to your NFC Central, because it's such an interesting division. The Minnesota Vikings, some people think, might be a sleeper club this year that might emerge. Any thoughts on the Vikings?
Yeah, I just don't see it. I think they're definitely the fourth team in that division. They may be able to surprise some people, but they lost Kirk Cousins. I don't see the Vikings making much noise. But the Steelers could be an interesting team. Justin Fields moving over there. Likely probably going to be backing up Russell Wilson. But if Russell Wilson struggles, I think Fields may be able to get that starting job. And Mike Tomlin, you know, he's always right around 500, and Justin Fields may be able to take Pittsburgh to the playoffs.
He is John Hancock Jr. You need to bring us home a winner today, brother.
I'll try my best. Thank you so much
for visiting with us. He visits with us all the time on Late Night with Hancock and Kelly. Hey, buddy, we're going to stick around and visit with Amy and Chris for a little while.
That's what they tell us. It's been an honor and a privilege to spend this time with all of you this morning here on The Voice of St. Louis. The news is next. Chris and Amy after that on The Voice of St. Louis KMOX.